You are listening to Conversations with Akilah. Please be aware you are getting ready to listen to an episode that is intended for a mature audience only. There may be some topics that offend those who are not ready to hear it or who may be or may have been triggered in the past by certain topics. Please keep in mind, I am not here to offend or disrespect or upset any entity, as my views and my opinions are my own. I will remain respectful, as you can do the same. Thank you.
Well. Welcome back to Conversations with Akilah. Wow. I'm not even going to go into the backstory. I'm not even going to do something like that to you. I am grateful to be back in front of my microphone in this capacity. It has been a while. You know, it's been a while. But I saw life go. I saw things are and things happen and life be life. And as the kids are saying or whatever, I'll be saying it too. But life be life. And so, yeah, I'm here. And if you've listened to me in the past, you already know what to expect. You already know how this is going to go. You know, I keep it real because I am real. Okay. So don't be surprised by anything at all. Do not. Okay, with all of that said, so I have been introduced to some new authors since we have last spoken, I believe. I may have mentioned this author in one of my last recordings that I was reading, but I have never made a podcast. I have never made a podcast episode about this particular author. And the time now has come to make the podcast, and I'm going to tell you why. So I have listened, her name is Love Belvin. I know you guys have heard me mention her before. I have listened to every audiobook Love Belvin has that has been produced. She's an author of numerous written books, but not all of them have had the opportunity to get to audiobook yet. So every series that's on audiobook, including the current one with, was it Love Uncharted? Asmir and Reyna, the story that, what is it, launched 1,000 ships? That is currently being released book by book. It's not completely released, so you have to pre-order and then it comes. So I'm currently in the middle of that series, but every series she's had recorded, I have had the pleasure of listening to. Now, not only have I listened to it, I have listened to some of them multiple times. I think the only series for Love that I have not listened to multiple times is the Wayward series, and that is with Kennedy and Icy Isaac, aka Young Lord, okay? AKA that guy, because I got to keep this PG-13 as much as I possibly can. I don't know why I have not been able to listen to the Wayward series. Again, I don't know. I think there was a visceral, like, I think that one was really close to home. There was something about Isaac, which I love. He's a homie, don't get me wrong. But there was something about him that I'm not ready to revisit yet. And I think that's what it is. So let me jump a little bit forward. So last week, I believe Love in the End Zone, the first book in the Connecticut King series, which is a long-term series that she is writing along with Christina C. Jones, another Black author, shout out to her. And this is now, these books are written, now they're coming, they're being rolled out in audio. That was released last week, I believe it was. And of course I pre-ordered it or whatever, it came, I have it, I bought it, it's on my Audible. And, but in the interim of that, Love played a clip from the first series that I've ever listened to about her. The first series that I've ever listened to from the Love Belvin universe, the LB universe, as it is called, that kept me in orbit until this very day. And I believe I listened to this book for the first time in 2022, maybe 2023, is the Muted Hopelessness, or Muted Hope. Is it Muted Hopelessness? Muted Hope, I can't remember. But it's with my guy, Ashton Spencer, and the illustrious Katoria McNabb. She had the audacity to play a clip that kind of just put me back in that head frame, and I blame Emmanuel Ingram wherever he is. Shout out to him. When I say he voiced Ashton so well, he voiced Ashton so well. Now, I've listened to the best of them on audio. Jacoby, whatever, Miles, like, I love him. But they have played multiple characters and I've never felt slighted. Like, I love hearing their voices. But there is something about the Emmanuel Ingram voicing Ashton Spencer way that he bodied. When I say he bodied Ashton, hearing that, I said, oh, hell, come on. I'm going to have to listen to this again. Because at this time, when I heard it last week, I'd already listened to the series twice. Love in the End Zone has just come out. I need to listen to this one. Like, I need to go into someone else's world right now. I need to listen to this one, child. I went back to book one. I sure did. I went right back into book one and started My Muted Love and have been entranced in Tori's and Ashton's world since last week. Due to this, I have been talking endlessly about them to the people in my life who care, because everyone does not care, and that's fine. But my sister, my best friend, I cannot stop talking about them. And it's funny, because the first time I listened to My Muted Love from the Muted Hopelessness series, I think I was so enamored with the book. I was listening to it because I liked it. Like, oh my God, this is good. Da, 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 da. I just wanted more. So I got all the shockers. I was just like, oh my God, how, what, when, how, oh my God. Like, I did all of that the first time. The second time I read the book, I think I was now, or listened to it on audio, I was too much in my feelings. Like, I was just way too much in my feelings. And in that time I was like, okay, I need to walk away from this because my feelings are hurting me too much. And now that I'm listening to it this third time, and I'm sure this is the third time of many other times I'm probably gonna go back to this series, I have a clearer picture of the main characters, their flaws, their strengths, their situationship, their relationship. I have a better handle on it where I'm not as emotional over the story, right? So I'm telling my sister, because I said to her, I said, well, I wanted to do this podcast. I wanted to introduce you guys to Katoria and Ashton, but I'm just going to tell you what I said to my sister, particularly. Ashton would be book bae for me. There would be no one else but him. He would be the epitome of book bae, I guess, because he was the first. I can see why Tori can't get rid of him. Like, he was the first. So my idea of Book Bay is definitely, oh, Ashton is that guy, you know, like, da, da, da. Until this third time listening to it, I realized, oh, I have unforgiveness in my heart for Ashton. Like, I cannot, like, you know what? Ashton was Book Bay. He was one of my Book Bays. I'm gonna tell y'all who the ultimate Book Bay for me is right now. But Ashton could have been Book Bay except for that one thing. And listening to the series this third time, I realized I haven't forgiven Ashton. I have not forgiven Ashton. And until you read the book, the whole series, you'll understand why it's been hard for me to forgive him. But outside of that, Ashton, is it Deshaun Spencer? Was that his name? Ashton? Oh my God, what is his middle name? Is that guy. You hear me, I tell you? Like, Jesus, it's him. He's that guy, for me at least. But ultimately, I ended up meeting someone named Ezra Carmichael in the Bonding with Ezra series, or in Covenant with Ezra series. I don't know the name of it. I don't know the name of the series. I know the name of the books. I met him. And when I say he is Book Bay, he is so much Book Bay, I feel like I would just walk into him on the street. Like, he is Book Bay. So, sorry, Ashton, move over. I hear a lot of people talk about Asmir, whatever. I hear a lot of people talk about Isaac. Yeah, that's cute. Ezra Carmichael, Prophet Ezra Carmichael, Pastor Ezra Carmichael, you hear me? Bishop Ezra Carmichael is Book Bay. I'm telling y'all, love, if you ever listen to this, out of all of them, I feel like Ezra is someone you know. You wrote that character too well. Too well. I realized, due to this unforgiveness that I have with Ashton, there are some things I need to get off my chest. I need to get some stuff off my chest, okay? And in all truthfulness, no one may ever listen to this. I may be the only person that ever goes back and listen to this podcast episode, but I have to get some things off my chest. So the Muted Hopelessness series, book one, is named My Muted Love. This, like I've said before, was the first book that I read from Love Belvin, and I've just been in her universe, floating around on stars ever since, right? This book opened up with one main character barking like a dog, like ooh, ooh, like a dog, like my dog Jomo, at the other main character. I was like, oh, I'm hooked. I'm hooked. Like, oh, this is serious. This book really appealed to me because of my own history at a historically Black college and university. I went to the Delaware State University, home of the Hornets, for 2 years. And funny enough, this story takes place around the time that I was there. So I think comparably, Ashton and I are closer in age than Tori and Ashton. I entered into Delaware State in June. Was it June? End of May, 2004. And Ashton is graduating his last semester at this school officially. We'll get to that. Was supposed to be December of 2006. So there's a lot of references to things I know. There's a lot of things that I can relate to. The styles, the words, the music that's referenced, I can relate to all of that. I can relate to going into a world that your world is nothing like. Like, I grew up, I graduated from high school in Patterson. I went to Kennedy, and I graduated from there. It was multicultural. It was Hispanics. We have Palestinians. We had a lot of black people. Some of our teachers were white. Like, it was well-rounded enough, right? In my life, pretty much, I've been around multiple cultures or whatever, but going onto a historically Black college campus and feeling that and learning why it was so important, I'm gonna be honest, if it wasn't for my mentors at the time, I didn't even know what a historically Black college and university was. I had never heard of an HBCU. It had never appealed to me. It wasn't something that I was just like, oh yeah, I want to do that. But the people around me had been to these types of universities. Like, you should at least apply. Like, I applied late. Like, it wasn't even like, I was like, oh, these are my dream schools. No, I applied late. And walking onto those campus, that campus for the first time, being away from home, being on my own, living in a different room. Although I knew my roommate, because she was the only other person, as far as I know, from my graduating year, who went to HBCU, and we ended up going to the same one, came with me. And shout out to Courtney, wherever she is. God bless you, girl. It was an experience, right? So Katoria McNabb, let me tell you a little bit about her. She is one of the main characters. She is a 18-year-old girl from a trailer park in Millville, New Jersey. And I believe that's South Jersey. So SoJo. It's South Jersey. She grew up to a single, she grew up with a single mother who really didn't care for her. And she was loved by a grandmother who did care for her. Unfortunately, the grandmother died, resulting in Katoria being completely under the control of her mother. And it really wasn't good for her. She unfortunately had traumas that affected her and how she looked and viewed herself, how she cared about herself. She didn't groom herself properly. She didn't have multiple sneakers. She didn't have proper undergarments. Like, she literally moved to Blakewood State University. Holla, that's the name of the fictional HBCU in this book, and across all of Love Belvin, I believe, in Christina C. Jones' books, this is the school that is referenced, with a book bag. She had no money. That's how uncared for she was. She talks about it, how the trailer park, the trailer she lived in the trailer park had holes in the floor. You know, it was hard for her, but because that was her world, everyone lived like that. You know, it wasn't that bad. Like, okay, my trailer is trash, so is yours. Or you live in the hood, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't any comparison where that stuff was concerned. The traumas I recently referenced, she was unfortunately molested by two of her mother's boyfriends, and she was born to a father who was already married. Funny enough, he was not a part of her life. But he did pay child support to the mother, until Tori. Well, he was paying it to the grandmother, and then the grandmother passed away. And then when Tori went back and lived with her mother, he ended up paying it to the mom. Tori, being a young kid, she gave, you know, she didn't want any of the money. Okay, this money is going to help take care of my home, my mom, my food, And that was it. When Tori now goes on the BSU campus, she's like, oh, my mom's going to send me my my money, and it never comes. But we'll get to that later on. It never comes. And due to that, she is stuck with one pair of sneakers, a sports bra, a tatted weave, and just feels very much out of place on this elite historically Black university field. She completely feels like an outsider, and it is present in, she has a quirky character. She calls people humans. She's not sure of her sexuality. Nowadays, she would identify as queer. But back then, there wasn't a word for that officially. I mean, like, I'm sure, of course the word was out there, but there wasn't a word to identify where she was, and her sexuality was in question because of the molestation that she went through. She didn't know if she liked boys or if she liked girls. She didn't know. She was just like, I don't know. She never opened up herself in that way because she had been hurt so bad. So that's a little bit about Katoria in the first book. She is on this campus because she received a scholarship from the university because she is one of the baddest female boxers around. Basically undefeated. She trains like a machine, and Blakewood wanted to get their hands on her quick, fast, in a hurry. And she does not disappoint. She is not a waste. She has not wasted their money. It was definitely worth their time. Her roommate is a mixed, meaning mixed with Caucasian and African American descent, girl named Samantha, who Tori begins to open up herself to over time, because she doesn't feel judged by her. She doesn't feel like, okay, I'm not being laughed at by her, because unfortunately Tori was laughed at a lot in this first book. It was tough. It was a tough transition. She didn't know anyone. The only people she had on campus getting there were her trainers. And that was tough. So when everyone else comes on campus, she's open up to this, hold up. These people, she calls them the West Beverly Hills crew, just to give you an idea of how elite they were. So that's Katoria. My Muted Love opened up in the now, because the series takes place over the course of 12 to 13 years of time. So the first book opens up with our second main character, I don't know, however you want to look at it, my guy Ashton Spencer, being asked to write a Sports Illustrated article on the undefeated boxer who is now 12 years later this person. We don't really learn about who this person is until the third book, so I'm not gonna get into that, meaning Tori definitely evolves, okay, over the course of these books. Life changes for her drastically. But he agrees to it reluctantly, not necessarily telling the individual why he doesn't want to do it. The individual is supposed to do it, but due to health circumstances, he's not going to be able to do it. So he asks Spencer, or Ashton, whatever you want to call him, he goes by both, if he's the only other person he trusts to do it. And he's like, oh, hell no. Like, I do not want to, I don't want to be around her. Like, I don't, at this time, we don't know why. We do not know why Ashton does not want to interview Tori at this point. This is how the book opens. And they go through the rigmarole of him trying to convince him. He's explaining why. And we're learning a little bit of the backstory on Ashton, how he had just traveled, I believe it was from France, and did a breaking story on the family there. And like, he is an accomplished journalist amidst other things. We'll get there. And he reluctantly agrees. And before the story kicks off in the past, he and Tori sit down to meet at some point. And then the story takes off. No, he goes to his mother and he talks to his mother about it. And she's like, I don't remember who that is. And like I said, we as the readers don't know what's going on. But he is eating their favorite pizza, which is margarita pizza, which is another big part of this story. He's eating this pizza and he's talking to his mother about her. And then the story goes back into the past. At the end of My Muted Love, that's when they officially meet. So he goes into the past. And when I talked about how the main character barked at the other main character, Tori was on campus a whole week before, or 2 weeks before the school opened up to everybody else. Ashton was also on campus, but not where she was, because he was the star quarterback for the Blakewood State University football team, slated to be drafted into the NFL, and his team of choice was the Connecticut Kings, which is another fictional sports team, because as you know, the state of Connecticut does not have a football team. So it's another fictional aspect that has been introduced into that is introduced in the Love Belbin universe, actually, and in the Christina C. Jones universe as well. And there's a lot of characters that have books written on them from some of the team players. Dope. Like, guys, oh, I just can't get enough. So his star team is that's where he wants to go. He is in his last semester of school as he is finishing early, because not only is he an accomplished football player, meaning athlete, he is very intelligent, very smart, and will be graduating early so he can focus on the combine the beginning of the following year, and he doesn't have to worry about school. Remember that. He sees Tori, because before he met Tori, him and another supporting character, I guess we could call that a secondary character, his girlfriend, Avery, if this was not a PG-13 / I know some people who maybe SAGE will listen to this, there's another word I would call her, but I won't do that, because every time I refer to Avery, there's a phrase that I use naming her. Read the book and you'll know why. He is telling Avery that I'm done. Like, he doesn't want to be with her anymore. He found out that she lied to him about someone who was really mean to him while he was pledging the fictional Alpha Psi Omega fraternity, frat, and the person that hated him was the person in charge of his line, and she lied about sleeping with him. And this was before they even started dating officially, and he just could never get over the fact of, like, why would you lie about something like that? They don't talk to each other for the whole summer. Now they're back on campus. He's like, yeah, I'm done. I don't want to be with you no more. And she's like, yeah, you're tripping. We're supposed to be getting engaged. We're getting married next year or whatever. Like, you can't do this to me. And he loves her, but he's done with her. So as they are both walking away from the conversation, Tori is walking past them and he barks at her. He barked at her, like, barked at her. And it was disgusting. Because this girl already has low self-esteem. She already feels like she's not worth. So the kids just walked in and messed up my flow. I had to pause my recording for a good few minutes so them and the dog could be quiet, so I could record in peace, okay? I don't want to try to continue to hear the dog barking in the background and them screaming for me. She want to know if she should cut her nails or not, so my daughter. Anywho, not exactly sure where I left off, but Ashton was barking at Tori and I was appalled, but I was also very intrigued, like, what would make this person think that it's okay to bark at another human being like that? Like, that is so cruel and so mean. And this particular instance sets up the trajectory, in my opinion, of course, of their relationship throughout this book. Like, it definitely does that. And they all get to interact with each other at some point throughout the book. It happens. There's an incident in this book where someone throws a milkshake at Tori while she's working in the cafeteria and they all laugh at her. Avery, who is Ashton's fake girlfriend, calls Tori diseased. She calls her names. It's horrible. And her little minions, such as Carmen and Andrea, you know, Andrea redeems herself eventually, but those type of people also fall in line with Avery and end up being mean to her. Sean Nicole is another person, a part of their crew too, but Sean Nicole over time learns, like, hold up, she's not, there's no reason for us to be mean to her. Like, there's, like, she learns that, she's not high class or whatever, elitist like us, but she's also not a bad person. Why are we being so nasty towards her? Like, there's no need for that. So Tori wants to go home. She does not want to stay. Her trainers tried to convince her to stay. Her trainer in New Jersey, they called him, his name is Uppercut or Cut, to kind of convince her to stay. And ultimately he cuts her off. He's like, there is nothing for you to come back to Millville for. Like, why would you come back? Why would you go back? He's not from Millville. I believe he's from New Brunswick or Newark. but there's nothing for you to go back to. Oh, I don't know if I told you guys this too. This book takes place on the Eastern Coast, like in the tri-state, very much. There are places referenced in this book that if you were from my area, you would know. You would have known these towns. You would have heard of these things. And it's insane. And it's like, I think that's another thing that kind of kept me enthralled by the book, that, wow, this is like home almost. Like these are real people around me. And like I said, I've listened to other books where, you know, they talk about Short Hills Mall and Presidential Boulevard and North Main. And it's like, who is this woman? Who is Love? Like, she doesn't show her face. I don't think I've ever seen her face plainly. I know there's some things on Instagram of her, because sometimes it makes me wonder, did I meet her somewhere? Like, did I ever walk past her? Do we know the same people? Because she really references things that I grew up around, that I would know firsthand. So yes, and Ashton, by the way, is also from New Jersey. He is from South Orange and Newark. So his father is the conglomerate CEO of the B-Way Burger, which is like a premier fast food chain that grew exponentially. And due to that, his father became a multimillionaire. They live a very rich lifestyle. However, his mother is not from that elitist background. Her family is from Newark. So he got the elitist stuff, but then he got the homegrown, down-to-earth stuff to his best friend. Now, I think his best friend's name is Deshaun. And they are best friends, but he's from the wrong side of the tracks, while Ashton is this preppy, da 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 da. He got a little hood in him too. Like, he ain't scared, he ain't no punk. But he has the dichotomy, whereas most of his family members on that side don't. So that's another thing that kind of draws me into this story. Now, Avery is from Texas. Her father is a peanut farm king, so he's very rich that way. Andrea, who's another supporting character, her family has a vineyard in California. It's crazy. Like, how she set up the story, these are very real people. Like, this could be true. Like, you know, like, this is crazy. But back to the book, Tori finally decides that she really doesn't have much of a choice in going back to New Jersey. While it would be good to go back to what she knows, I mean, granted, she's 18 years old. Like, all she knew was home. Again, I get that. And she's on this place where she does not feel comfortable. But then she eventually realizes, going back home to what? My mother don't have my back. The guy who's trained me my whole life basically don't have my back. What am I? My cousins are, you know, living their life and doing their own thing, who she loves and adore. Her cousins that I introduced are Renata and Trisha. You'll learn more about them eventually. And Nene, who is Trisha's daughter. And she's like, I'm going back home to do what? So she finally decides to give Blakewood State a chance and really lean into the opportunity that she's been given. And that is where the story between Ashton and Katoria begins to blossom. So Tori has to be tutored, because she didn't hit the marks for general education for, I believe it was writing or English. And, you know, Ashton being the all-around, well-rounded individual he is, of course he signs up to tutor people because he just has all the time in the world. He doesn't. And he decides to, she ends up on his roster to be tutored, and he is very nasty to her, like very nasty. She was late. He doesn't like tardiness, you know, like he already, like he's not happy to be doing it. He goes off on her about, like, this is why we shouldn't let everybody come into this elite school. Because mind you, Blakewood State was the school for him. He got scholarships to Princeton and I'm not sure where else, but he was going to Blakewood and that was that. And she barges out. She goes to her trainer's office and she's just like, I do not want to work with him. She doesn't complain. But the trainer takes it upon herself to go to Ashton's trainer, who was his athletic director, big title in this school, and says, listen, he needs to show that he is the well-rounded, mature individual that he promotes himself to be. He is making Tori feel uncomfortable. Da, 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 da. Tori said nothing of the sort. She was like, I'm just done. I don't want to be bothered with this anymore. To quell Tori's athletic director, Ashton's athletic director is like, you got to make this right. Like, you have to make this right. Like, we are embarking in a world where you are not going to be able to talk to females the way you do and get away with it. Things are changing. Oh, how prophetic he was where that was concerned. And he was like, all right, I'm going to make it right. So he decided after some time, he came up with his own thing to do, and he's going to reach out to her and introduce it to her. We are now in the next scene introduced to Ashton's best friend / sex educator, the porn star. Her name is Norma Jean. I believe that was Marilyn Monroe's real name, right? I'm not sure. And they're at dinner together celebrating the fact that Norma Jean has gone into remission from her cancer. So, you know, they're celebrating, they're talking, and now it's time for him to leave the restaurant, and he's outside getting to his car. It is pouring rain. He sees Tori walking down the street in the rain, unbeknownst to him, because she was at Applebee's with her trainer and her trainer's friends. And one of the trainer friends, an adult, a grown woman, made a pass at her. And it made her feel very uncomfortable, so she just left. She was nowhere near the school. She didn't know how she was going to get home, and it's pouring raining outside. So that happened, and Ashton is driving, and he sees her, and she's angry. People are honking the horn at her, calling her stupid because she's walking in the rain. And Ashton sees her. He's like, yo, you need to get in the car. Like, are you crazy? Get in my car. Guys, he's driving a Porsche. He's driving a Cayenne Porsche. And he's like, you need to get in my car. Like, she's like, absolutely not. I'm not getting in the car, but better sense prevails. She's like, you know, I'm going to get killed out here. She gets in the car. He's able to apologize to her about his behavior, and ultimately he offers her the opportunity to run with him in the morning. He runs every morning, I believe it was at 5 a.m., 4 miles at the track. And that was his way of rectifying his poor behavior and showing that he could be, you know, the mature person in this situation and not make people feel uncomfortable. Da, da, da. So this is where the story of Ashton and Tori really blossomed. This is the time where that alone time, although they're not really talking to each other while they're running, because he's a heady individual. He's in his head. He don't want to talk to nobody. He don't want to be bothered with no one. And she can't keep up with him. You know, she can't. But she tries. She tries, and he's really impressed with her endurance. He was impressed with her before that because the team had saw her training and they were just amazed about how machine she was. But he's impressed with how she doesn't let his speed intimidate her, and she still tries to keep up. The problem is her sneakers are horrible. It's to the point where she has to take them off and bend them sometimes because they're no good. I believe the sneakers had a hole in the bottom of them. They smelled. And this girl was walking around campus like this, like she didn't care. And he saw that. And he was like, yo, I can't leave this girl like this. Like, there has to be a way for me to help her. And he, unbeknownst to her, ships her 2 pairs of Jordans to the school for her to wear. And that is how Ashton begins to take care of Tori and the ice chips that he feels towards her, and vice versa, her towards him, begin to chip away, and they begin to understand each other on a more human level other than a more arbitrary one. Like, you are that person, I'm this person, our world should never collide. Our world should never interact with each other, but that because of these times that they're spending with each other and these ways that he's showing her that he is kind, that he is generous, and he's not the bad person that he presented himself to be in the beginning. She's learning that, hold on, I think I like this guy. Like, I think, you know, if I had to call anyone a friend or someone, like, you know, who can relate to me, it would be him. Child. They tease her because Andrea, who is Avery's minion, at the time, sees when Ashton drops Tori off in front of their dorm hall. And she's like, who's Cayenne? Meaning she's referring to the Porsche truck. And she's like, yo, mind your business. So Andrea now has it in her head that Tori has a rich boyfriend. Like, who, how in the world are you getting dropped off at a college campus in a car like that? Like, who are you? Like, look at you. You look diseased. You're dirty. You smell. Who is that? And, you know, Tori's just like, none of your business. They all buck up on Tori on the, you know, outside. And Tori was like, you know, telling her, oh, she's probably, you know, that ain't her man. Da, da, da. And she's like, it is my man. And as a matter of fact, we have a date this Friday and he's taking me here. Da, da, da. Child, she ain't had no date with nobody. It was Ashton. But Ashton didn't even know about this. So when he hears about this, he's like, okay, I can't let the girl go out like that because technically it's my fault why they're teasing her. They think she has this rich individual in her life who loves her and who's dating her. Guys, he sets her up. He takes her shopping. He buys her new underwear. He sets her up for dinner at this top-notch place in Umtown. He takes her to this art, his driver takes her to this art place, and her eyes are really open like, hold up. There's a whole nother world out here I know absolutely nothing about. She eats foods she's never ate. She is treated in ways she's never treated. She's experiencing clothing she's never had. And he did that for her. And she's like, wow. She goes over to his house to thank him, to, you know, show him how she looks. Oh, guys, also, she doesn't have a cell phone, by the way. Tori does not have a cell phone. Like, that's how broke she is. She doesn't even have a cell phone. Now, granted, this is taking place officially in 2006. A lot of people didn't necessarily have cell phones. It wasn't as prevalent as it is now, but it was pretty prevalent. Like, people were communicating. Like, they talk about the usage of the BlackBerry a lot in that time, and oh man, it brings back all the feels, guys. It brings back all the nostalgia, you know? And eventually he gets her a phone. That's just one of the, I'm just giving you guys like a smidge of what Ashton did for Tori, according to him, just being a nice guy, you know, not realizing that his heart was growing softer and softer and softer towards her. And she not realizing that there is another human out there who is not family, that I'm able to feel vulnerable around and feel safe around. And it's not sexual at this point. It's not. And it's not, you know, predatory. It's nothing of the sort. Like, he makes me feel good. He makes me feel like a real person and not an object, a piece of meat or diseased or whatever. And it's really intriguing to watch their story unfold, because they both can't tell anyone about their friendship outside of it being a friendship. And even in that sense, they really can't tell nobody that they're even as deep of friends as they are, because no one's not gonna understand that. And I'm not gonna say not no one. I think Samantha, her roommate, would have understood, but Tori was already so untrusting of people that Samantha kinda got the brunt of her trauma in that sense. Like, I can't tell you about this because this bubble that we're in, this little friendship that I'm experiencing with him, is not supposed to be happening. I am not supposed to be around him. I am not supposed to be in his world. That's not supposed to happen. So that's pretty interesting, right? And then it's not that Ashton is necessarily hiding it, but Ashton lives his world in the sense where it's no one's business. I don't necessarily have to say anything to anyone. But Dre eventually sees, Dre is another athlete on BSU campus, but he's a elite basketball player and he's also a preacher boy. So that's a very interesting story too. He realizes that Ashton has a little soft spot for Tori, you know, like he wants to set her up. Cause I mean, this school has massages for their athletes and they have juice bars, and he kind of sets her up with massages and, you know, does all of these. This is all in book one, y'all. Book one, mind you, we got two more books to go through. This is all in book one. And I don't want to give too much because I really do want you guys or whoever ever listens to this to pick up the book and read it or listen to it the way I did. It's really good. It's you. Oh, one thing I love about love. A lot of authors, and there's nothing wrong with this. You know, there's nothing wrong with what I'm getting ready to say because that's the thing. A lot of authors focus on plot development. So you get a lot of, you know, where they are and what's going on and, you know, that type of stuff. But what love does, and I think this is what kept me drawn into this particular book, she is a master at character development. Like, and in my real life, I'm a coach. I'm a cognitive coach. I deal with helping people process their emotions every day. That is what I do. So to get into a character like this, you know, characters like these, and to see what makes them tick and to get into why they really are the way they are and how they are all multifaceted, it really appealed to that side of me. So if you are into character development as well as plot development, she gives excellent plot development. I'm telling you, you feel like you know these places. Many of them are fictional, but it feels like it could just be home. She gets into character development real well. And if you're into that, I say give her a try. I don't want to prolong you guys any longer. And again, I don't want to give away the whole book. Please pick it up. But this was my review of the beginning of Ashton's and Tori's love affair and what a love affair it was. That girl endured a lot. She did. And Ashton eventually comes to her rescue, not in just the physical, but in the mental and the emotional. And I think that's very touching. We, as human beings, can be so cold towards each other, right? Because of the differences that we feel as if we have, not realizing that we are all blood, you know, warm-blooded. We all have been through something. We all have, you know, scars from the things that we've been through. We are all trying to process the hurt and trying to process the victories and, you know, ever growing, molding ourselves into the identities we want to carry on with, not realizing that we're flawed, right? And people tend to use their outward appearance as a Teflon, not realizing that there's a whole nother person underneath that we should get to know. And I think their story to me illustrates that, the compassion he showed her in the beginning, him not even understanding what was happening. You will hear him say that, like, whoa, why am I feeling this for Katoria? Like, why am I feeling this for Tori? Like, where did that come from? You know, he doesn't even think it could happen because she's her. How could I ever have these, you know, feelings towards this individual? But it happens. And by the end of book one, we see the setup for book two and how that relationship, that friendship that they called it, although it was deeper than a friendship, clearly, that friendship that they initially called what they have exponentially grew. And she became his person and he became her person. And that soul tie definitely became solidified tightly. Wound up, put a bow on it, they were tied forever by the end of book one. So that is my review. If you like it, oh my God, if you're gonna pick it up and read it, let me know. If you have any questions, I'll answer, because I've already given away a lot of spoilers. But please, 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 as you know, I love to read and I love to talk to people about reading and about books. Thank you if you've gotten this far to listening. I appreciate you. You are much, much, much appreciated in my world. Until next time, bye-bye. You just finished listening to Conversations with Akilah, where I have a lot to say. Okay? Please be sure to tune in every Friday where you can have a conversation with yours truly. We'll be talking about any and everything. Nothing is off the table. Please remember to share this and like it and comment everywhere podcasts are heard. We are on Apple, we are on Spotify, you name it. your like, your comment, your share will help this podcast grow. I appreciate you. Thank you.